Create Your Own Life, episode 187.
You're listening to the Create Your Own Life podcast, the show to help you create life on your terms. 3 days a week, Jeremy Ryan Slate interviews the most successful people in business and in life to help you create the life you want to create. Welcome to Life Creation Nation.
This episode is sponsored by Slate Media Productions. This is the new company that my wife and I have started. It is a done-for-you podcast solution, meaning if you are the busy business owner that does not have time to do anything but wants a podcast, wants all the PR associated with it, that's what we do. We get you in publications, we get your show out there, and we do absolutely everything for you. This is a turnkey solution. You can check it out over at www.slatemediaproductions.com. This episode is sponsored by Vital Sleep. Is your snoring or your bed partner snoring keeping you up, leaving you irritable and tired during the day? I want to tell you about the Vital Sleep Anti-Snoring Mouthpiece. It's FDA cleared, customizable and adjustable to your mouth, and reduces snoring on the very first use. Check them out over at www.vitalsleep.com and reclaim a good night's sleep. Hey, what's up, everybody? Jeremy here. Hope you guys had an amazing weekend. And first off, I excuse all the oinking you may hear in the background. My pig is actually rooting around the living room behind me right now. You're totally not seeing this, but it's really funny to watch him root in a blanket. Basically, rooting is when he takes his nose and he's like jabbing the blanket with it and everything. Anyway, hope you guys enjoyed your weekend, and I'm really excited for today's guest. He's young and a total badass and getting stuff done really quickly in the publishing world. His name is Chandler Bolt, and he is the founder of Self Publishing University. He's figured out a way to have a best-selling book to the account of he's got five best-selling books and is just about to release his sixth one, which has actually come out as you're listening to this episode. So I'm really excited to dive into publishing with Chandler, what a best-selling book looks like, and how his new book is different. Before we jump into the interview, I want to remind you guys that if you haven't checked out the private Facebook group over at jeremyryanslate.com/CYOL, be sure to do that. So without further ado, guys, let's get into our interview with Chandler Bolt. Hey, what's up, Life Creation Nation? Jeremy here, and I'm really stoked for the guy we have with us today. He's been hustling all over the place, so we finally got a little bit of his time. Welcome to the Create Your Own Life podcast, Chandler Bolt.
Yes, great to be here. Thank you, Jeremy.
Chandler, I am so stoked to have you on the show, man. This has been a while I've wanted to have coming, so share with the audience a little bit about who you are and what you do, man.
Yeah, so my name's Chandler Bolt. I'm from South Carolina originally. I live in San Francisco now. I run a company called Self Publishing School. It's an online training program. We teach people how to write, market, and publish their first book in 90 days and really how to use that book to grow their income, authority in their business. So that's what we do. That's what I've been growing. Basically, we went from zero to about 1.32 million last year. We'll do about 2 million this year. So we're scaling, we're building. And in the process, we've had thousands of people go through our program and a ton of books. I mean, if you just go on Amazon on any given day, there's a very high likelihood that you'll see at least a couple of our students' books kind of in the ecosystem there. So it's been an exciting time, and that's where we're at.
Totally. And when I saw you speak at Thrive, is it you have five best-selling books besides?
Yes. So five out and number six coming out here in just a few weeks from when we're recording this interview. So pretty excited about that.
Love it, man. Well, we'll get into that in just a second. But the big thing we try to figure out on this show is we look at people that have created life on their own terms. And, you know, that's something you've definitely done, man. But was there a defining moment in entrepreneurship where you kind of made that decision for yourself? And, you know, what was that like where you're like, you know what, screw this, I'm going to do it my way?
Ha. As I'm sure anyone says on this show, there was multiple. And for me, one of the first steps was deciding to drop out of school. So I'd always told myself, you know what, I said, I'm here for the learning, not for the degree. And I know I want to be an entrepreneur. So if any point, if it makes sense to drop out, I'll do it. Now, there's a big difference between saying that to yourself and then actually doing it.
Right.
Right. And so I thought about it for a while. And one of the first times was when I had a friend, we came back from this conference and I was going to school. And all the time my mom would call me up And she knew I was running ragged. I was running a business. It was the first time I hit six figures with my business. I was a full-time college student. I was a young life leader. I was just, you know, had a lot of, I was prescribed for Adderall.
So
I was,
right.
To be completely frank with you, I was taking a lot of Adderall, not sleeping a lot, and just trying to get through it. And so she would always call me, and she knew that I was just maxed out. And she'd always say, "Hey, Chandler, why don't you stop this stuff, this extra stuff, and just kind of focus on school?" And I was like, "Mom, I don't think you realize, like, if I did that, I would be miserable. This extra stuff is the only thing keeping me sane." And that kind of made me think about things. And then I had a friend who said, "Chandler, when are you going to drop out of school?"
Wow.
And he just straight up said that after we got back from this conference. And it made me think. I was like, "Well, you know, I don't have to drop out. I can double down and finish early." And the thought of that made me want to throw up in my mouth. I mean, it was just that didn't sound good. So I was like, and so that really shook me to the core and said, "Okay, well, if it's not worth finishing early, then is it actually even worth finishing?" And so I went down that rabbit trail and basically talked to a lot of mentors, thought about it for a while, and just said, "You know what? I need to drop out. The worst case scenario, I will completely fail and I can come back to school in a year. Best case scenario, this is going to be a long-term huge impact on my life." So that's what I did. I dropped out and said, "Hey, I'm going to go for this entrepreneurship thing." And that was really the first of many defining moments and the first of a year plus of struggle. But then the real defining moment in my life and what cemented my life's purpose is about 2 years ago. And this was about a year after I had dropped out. I was just failing really, really hard. I'm talking like my bank accounts were just hemorrhaging money, and I was trying to figure out how to pay rent. And I was on a cruise with a company that I used to be with, Student Painters. It was an internship I had. And it was all the top performers from the company. And on that cruise, on the very last night, me and my friends were just hanging out and talking about the year, talking about what was coming up. We talked about our five-year goals and all this stuff. And then on that night, tragically, one of my friends fell two stories, landed on his head, and a few hours later, he passed away.
Oh my God!
And he was 20 years old. And literally, you know, I was the first one down there, and I had like his blood on my arms. I was trying to get him to come back to consciousness. Like, it was a pretty traumatic experience. And that same weekend, I came back from the cruise and I found out, that my grandma had also passed away that weekend. And so, as you can imagine, this is already a pretty futile time in my life, and I'm kind of in this transition, right? And so when you're in a transition like that, you're looking for anything to grab onto. It's like you're floating down a river, and you're trying to find a rock that you can grab onto so you don't go off the end of the waterfall, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was already feeling that way, and, you know, meanwhile, all this stuff happened. So that kind of shook me to my core, and the defining moment for me, and I know I'm going a little bit long with this story, but I'll wrap this.
Yeah, but it all matters, man, so that's fine.
the defining moment for me was, you know, I talked to my buddy Kendall was his name, and I talked to his dad after the funeral, and he wanted to know how his son passed away, because obviously I was one of the only people there, and, you know, he had heard the media accounts and all this stuff. So I just got done telling him the story of what happened. And then he said, "You know what, Chandler?" He said, "Kendall was my only son. He was the family name. I'm old. I can't have more kids. The only good that can come out of this is if other people's lives are positively impacted by this happening." And that just kind of punched me in the gut. And I said, "You know what?" Right a few hours before he passed away, Kendall told me about his five-year goals, his plans, his dreams, and he'll never get to accomplish any of those things. So it's up to me to make sure that, you know, I'm kind of living for two now, right? It's up to me to not only make sure that his goals and dreams are accomplished, but mine are too. And it's my job to kind of live out his legacy and make sure that something good comes out of this situation. So that kind of re-sparked my fire
mm-hmm.
for entrepreneurship and for what I was doing at self-publishing school. And because that was without going way longer on the story, that was Kendall had attended one of my webinars, and right before he passed away, he wrote a book. And his book was able to be published after he passed away. And that was kind of like a piece of his legacy. And I saw that type of story playing out for our students. And I was like, you know what, this is the only thing that I'm really doing that's making a difference and that's making this world a better place. So I need to double down on that. And that's when I kind of doubled down with self-publishing school, and then the rest is history.
Wow. And the thing I want to ask you to that extent, Chandler, is I know a lot of people listening in the audience have probably been not in an experience exactly like yours, but in one that has crushed them, you know, maybe the loss of a family member, the loss of a friend. And I think people a lot of times just kind of curl up and that's the end of it. You know, how did you look at that situation and decide and figure out how to draw strength from it rather than, you know, curling up and, you know, figuratively dying on it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, because there's two reactions, right? You can become a victim, and then the rest of your life you'll be a victim. Or you can use that situation, you can channel that situation to fuel you. And I think it's just a conscious choice that you have to make, because at the end of the day, I said, you know what, if I were to die tomorrow, would I be happy with the life I lived? And the answer was no. So the second question I asked is, okay, well, what am I doing about it? What am I doing to actually make the world a better place? And when you ask a difficult question like that, yes, it can be intimidating. But at the end of the day, what went through my mind was, I don't want to be on my deathbed how many ever years from now and have regret and say, oh, man, I phoned this thing in. I didn't give it all I had. And so I asked those tough questions. I said, you know what? There's that way I could just, you know, curl up in a ball and just mail this thing in and be
right.
Really disappointed, or I can actually do something about it. And so I just use that to fuel me.
Totally. Well, you mentioned self-publishing school a bit there too. You know, how come book publishing, Chandler? What really led you there? Because I know for myself, I've done quite a bit of writing, but man, like to actually get started and get some stuff written can be the hardest freaking part, man. Like what led you down that road?
Yeah, well, you know, it is hard and it is intimidating for someone who's never done it before, right?
Yeah.
And so what led me down that road, it's actually the most unlikely path ever, because I mean, I already mentioned that I'm a college dropout. I was also, when I was in college or in school in general, I was a C-level English student. I was one of those people, maybe you can relate, maybe not, but I was one of those people who I was in all these honors classes, like in school, except for English.
You know, I understand.
My motto was, give me a test, but don't give me a paper. Like, if you give me a test, I'll make a great grade. If you give me a paper, I'm going to fail it. And I did fail many times. And I also, I mean, I got C's, D's. It looked like a post-mortem had just happened every time I got a paper back from an English teacher. There was so much red marks on, I could barely see the paper that I wrote.
Wow.
And so it's one of those things where it was an unlikely venture, but I wrote a book about productivity, and it was lessons I learned from running a six-figure company while also going to college full-time. And I did that, and that was successful. You know, it made almost $7,000 in the first month and continued to make thousands of dollars in passive income month after month after month. And it was actually what paid the bills when I dropped out of school. So the first book was successful. I did another book with my brother that was a charity project. So it was, the whole premise there was, buy one book, save one life. So for every book purchased, it bought a life-saving malaria pill for someone in a third world country.
That's awesome. So
all the profits from that book went to charity. And then I helped a friend do a book, and that was successful. And then, you know, people just kept asking about it. And it's one of those things, it's like, you can only get smacked in the face so many times before you turn around, or smacked on the butt so many times before you turn around. And it's like, I was trying a failing business that just wasn't working. And meanwhile, I had people asking over and over and over again, Chandler, how are you doing this book stuff? Tell me about it. And I would just say, oh, I'll tell you about it. And I'd hop on a call with them for like an hour, tell them everything that I know, and then say, hey, good luck. Hope this works. It's just for free, like not even charging, just saying, hey, I want to help you out. And I was doing that over and over and over again.
Right.
And finally, I said, you know what? People are asking, my business is failing over here. Meanwhile, everyone's asking me about this. I should actually turn some attention to this, and let's do some training. So that's what we did. We did a basic launch of the first version of self-publishing school. We called it Best-Selling Book System. And we launched it before we created anything. I'm a big proponent of that. So selling and validating your idea before you spend months building something. So we sold it. We had about $86,000 in sales, 44 students. Fast forward a few months, we had over a 60% success rate with our students that wrote and published a book in an industry where, you know, you're lucky if even 10% of people open the course. So we had a huge success rate. We were really proud of that. And that was the point where I said, okay, wow, this is something that not only will people buy, but we have material that will make people successful. So I can run with this. I can be confident that this works, and I can really get behind this.
Well, and the thing that I keep thinking about in this, Chandler, is how does a guy that wasn't somebody doing well with writing and feared writing turn it into a business? Like, what goes into a book that sells well?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of irony to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That I dropped out of school and then started a school.
Right.
So publishing school, I mean, the irony is not lost on me with that one. But, you know, there are multiple questions there. I mean, how do you transition from that? I think for me, you play to your strengths.
Mm-hmm.
So writing still is not my biggest strength. I'm much better on a podcast like this or live video or, you know, that sort of thing. Like, that is where I shine. But I have people around me, and I've built a team around me that can help support what we're doing. So that's what I really encourage people, because we have one of the processes that we teach is to speak your book. So if speaking is better for you, we walk through a whole outline process and then say, okay, here's how you can speak it in like a few hours. And that can be way easier for you if you're not a great writer. So I'm a big proponent of playing to your strengths, and that's kind of how it transitioned over that. I'm happy to dive down the rabbit trail of successful book launches or things like that, but just let me know if you want to go that route.
Totally. Well, and to that extent, man, like, I can totally agree with you on like the speaking, because I know you can probably do this as much as I can. You tend to go off on one subject and you can't recapture that when you sit down with a piece of paper or a computer.
My mind travels faster than my fingers, so that's a problem, right? The only way to battle that is to record yourself speaking.
Right.
Otherwise, if your mind continues to travel faster than your fingers, then you're just going to lose that.
Totally. And how do you go then from, you know, basically recording this, putting it down? What kind of happens then to actually make this something, you know, that's a physical book and not just, I guess, a transcript in that way?
Right. That's an important question, and one that I don't think many people ask, because you have most people who they'll just say, oh yeah, speak your book in an hour. And then they do that, and then they just publish the transcription.
It's not readable, right?
That's a horrible book and such a dumb idea, because I feel like some people just think that if you just poop out content and then put it into the world, like, you're going to be successful. And it's a volume game, and it's not at all. So what we do is it's important that you do some pre-work.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this mind map outline write process that I teach. And so it's important that if you're going to speak your book or however you're going to write the book, you do a mind map first, which is a brain dump onto a piece of paper, everything you can possibly think of on your topic. Then it's important that you turn that mind map into an outline. So that's kind of your step-by-step, your chapter-by-chapter outline, right? So then, so once you get that, you're good. And then you have your chapter-by-chapter outline. Then the important thing is that you do that again and again on a chapter-by-chapter basis. So you take a chapter one, you mind map everything that you know about that chapter. Then you do that for 10 minutes. Then for 10 minutes, you turn that mind map into an outline. Then you can speak your book.
Mm.
So then it's actually really easy, because the biggest mistake I see people make is they say, all right, I'm going to speak my book. They fire up the recorder. And then 30 minutes later, they have no clue where they're at or how they got there.
Wow.
Right? You just wonder, like, oh, wow, I'm so far off on a tangent that this is just worthless. I'm going to scrap the whole thing. But if you do that pre-work, which is so important, and it doesn't take that much time, but it's going to drastically reduce the amount of time that you spend doing the book. So you do that pre-work, then you speak it, then you have two choices. You can either do some self-editing. And you can do what I call the verbal read through, which is where you go through and actually read your book out loud in an audible way. And that really helps you spot where things are off the tracks or on the tracks or that sort of thing.
Right.
And then for the, you know, you, so you can do it that way, or you can hire an editor, which if you have a budget, I highly recommend that. I always say great editors can turn my third grade papers into best-selling books. So,
that's awesome.
An editor really goes a long way, and that's pretty simple to find one and to use them, and they can really help craft and hone in on your message.
Totally, and that's kind of been your process between the five best-selling books you put out so far, and we're actually anticipating very soon your sixth book, which is, you know, soon to probably be a bestseller. What's the new one about, man?
Yeah, so the new one is called Published: The Proven Path from Blank Page to Published Author. So this is really the book that I wish I had when I wrote my first book. You know, you try to scramble around and look at blog posts and videos and piece together all this stuff. And at one point, you know, I'm an executor. If you give me a plan, I can execute it. And so it was really frustrating to me to not have a plan. You know, I thought for sure, I'm like, well, somebody's had to have come up with like just a step-by-step process, and I couldn't find one. So it really is the proven path from blank page to published author. So it's a 10,000 foot view. It's everything you need to know, from writing the book to finding an editor, to working with an editor, to coming up with a title, to how to get a good cover, to how to successfully market the book with no audience. Really end to end, the proven path that I've used, coming up on the sixth time, and that we've taught, or that I've taught to thousands of people through self-publishing school. So we've kind of honed our methods and our methodology, and that's where we are now, and it's all crystallized into this book.
Awesome, man. And to that end of the methodology, where do you see a lot of, I guess, new writers going wrong? Because a lot of this people listening to the show are probably going to be ones writing a book for the very first time and definitely checking your book out. But where do you see a lot of them going wrong when they get started, man?
First, the first and biggest mistake is going way too broad with their topic. So it's the whole try to please everyone, end up pleasing no one. That sort of thing. Jack of all trades, master of none. People, they'll start with this broad idea, like how to live your passion, fulfill your purpose, and create an epic life or something like that. And you hear a title like that, and I have no clue what that book's about or what it could do for me.
And why would then I you find out they're a coach of some sort, too.
Yeah. They're the coach to coach who coach coaches.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry to cut you off.
So that's the biggest mistake is they go way too broad. Now, that's where most people get hung up. The second biggest mistake that I see people make is not only do they not go specific enough with their topic, and like I said, that captures a lot of people, but they try to have a perfectly written five chapters, right? And so they edit as they write. And we all know someone who's sitting on five perfectly, quote unquote, perfectly written chapters, and they've been on that for years, and they're never going to finish their book. So that's the biggest mistake I see people make, is they don't focus on the rough draft, and instead, because writing is difficult, you know, it's an uncomfortable process. So what do? Your mind makes up excuses and things that you should be doing, anything but writing. So, you know, they say you can tell when a writer's on a deadline because that's when you'll find them on Facebook the most.
Yeah, yeah.
it's the truth, because your brain is tricking you into saying, hey, this is uncomfortable. Let me find something else that's a little more comfortable, right?
Right.
So you're bouncing around. And so instead, what I recommend is focusing solely on the rough draft and making it a rough draft, just getting to the finish line. Because there's this magical thing that happens when you get to the finish line with your rough draft, and that's that you start to see the light at the end of the tunnel. So get to the finish line with your rough draft and do not edit as you write. We only have two rules inside self-publishing school when it comes to writing your book. The first one is you can't write more than one book at one time. And the second one is that you can't edit while you write, because those are two of the biggest mistakes that I see people make.
Oh, man. I think you hit me on all the mistakes I'm making, man. About a month ago, I sat down in a weekend and wrote about, I think, 19,000 words on everything I know about podcasting, and then tried to edit while I was writing and everything else, and have not picked it up since. So I think there's some things I got to look at here, man.
Yeah, well, it's disheartening. That's why, right? You probably read what you wrote, and you said, oh, my gosh, Like, was I drunk when I wrote this? I can't even believe I thought this was good.
Right.
Right. I mean, like, what planet was on, was I on? What drugs was I taking when I wrote this? Because I thought this was good and now I'm reading it and it sucks. And that's a natural, like, that's going to happen, but it's better for that to happen when you've already finished your rough draft. Because then you have, for most people at least, they have enough momentum to take them to the finish line. But if you start going down that path when you're a quarter or a third or halfway through the book, then you'll never get to the finish line.
Love it. And that new book you have coming out, man, where can our audience pick it up so they can kind of get their asses moving on figuring out this whole publishing thing?
Yeah, well, you know, they can, so we're giving away some free copies of this book. So if you want a free copy, and the offer's still live while you're listening to this, you can go to self-publishingschool.com/published. And that's with an ED. Okay, self-publishingschool.com/published, or you can just get it on Amazon.
Absolutely, and we'll definitely mention that again at the end of this episode. But I want to kind of get a little bit more into you as the entrepreneur, Chandler. What role has mentorship played for you in your journey?
Oh, huge, huge, huge. It's my view on mentorship is I always try to find someone who's two steps ahead of me that I learn from and ask questions to. The reason why is because if they're beyond two steps, I found oftentimes that the advice that they give is not as relevant, and the struggles that they're going through, like the struggles that I'm going through, are no longer relevant to them.
Right.
So if they're multiple steps ahead, I'll say, hey, how can you do this one thing? And they'll say, oh, I don't know, I've got someone on my team that handles that. And I was like, okay, well, that's not really helpful unless maybe you can put me in touch with someone on your team. But even then, that won't be as beneficial. So I'm a big proponent of finding someone two steps ahead of where you are now and getting advice from them. And for me, that takes the form of going to conferences. That takes the form of, finding mentors, hiring coaches if need be. Reading books, you know, like you can find mentorship in a lot of different ways at a lot of different price points. You just have to find what works for you.
That's actually a really great point that I've never had anybody make on this show, is that sometimes we go from somebody that's too far away from where we want to be. So they're not quite in that grind yet still.
It would be like me saying, going up to Warren Buffett and saying, hey, Warren, can you teach me how to manage my finances?
And he's going to look at you and say, no.
Yeah. Like, well, step one, read this book. Step two, practice this for 15 years. Step three, come back and talk to me, right? Like,
right.
It would be a disservice to him and a disservice for me, for him to try and break that down for me. Because you see, he's just so far ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of that, what's the best piece of advice that you've ever received, Chandler?
Best piece of advice is don't take advice from someone you wouldn't gladly switch places with.
Mm.
So in that, you know, what that means is, okay, if I have a business friend that's been divorced 3 times and his business is doing okay, but his life is in shambles, then any advice that he gives me, I'm going to take with a grain of salt because family is important to me. Those things are so. Don't take advice from someone you wouldn't gladly switch places with, which also happens to be one of the reasons I dropped out of school. I got tired of learning how to run a business from professors who had never ran a business. That didn't really make much sense to me.
Mm, and have you ever been on the other side of that argument before?
What do you mean?
As in you've actually taken that advice and been like, wow, man, that was really bad advice.
Oh, I've taken some advice from someone who I wouldn't switch places with.
Yeah.
I feel like oftentimes when you do it, you don't know that you're doing it until it's well after the fact. So yeah, almost definitely I have.
Yeah.
But you just don't see the effects of it for a while, I think.
I got it. In terms of skill set, what would you say is your biggest skill and how have you developed that?
My biggest skill, I would say, and I don't even know if this is a skill, but it's my work ethic.
Mm.
You know, it's the whole Will Smith, I will die on that treadmill.
Yeah.
Like you put me on a treadmill, I'll die on that treadmill kind of thing. I have yet to meet anyone in my life, and I've searched really hard that will work as hard as I will. And so I've always known from when I was a kid, especially if it was in sports, say, hey, you can outskill me, your parents were probably made more money than me, than my parents. They probably, you have lessons, you have technique, all that stuff, but you can't outwork me. It's just not possible. And so I, that was the, that would give me confidence to just keep fighting. And so you give me enough time, I can beat anybody, but it's just through my work ethic. And how did I learn that? From my parents, for sure. I mean, they're blue collar. They met at a factory, and you know, they put my butt to work on a regular basis growing up.
Yeah.
Saturday mornings were for splitting wood and all that good stuff. So, that would be it.
And I think that's a really great point though, man, because I've kind of found myself in that same boat as well, where, you know, I'll outwork anybody, though I don't feel I'm super skilled at anything. And, you know, when the thing that's interesting about that is a lot of times people that do have that skill can end up in a spot where they're lazy because they rely on that skill. And I think when you rely on hustle, you can always outwork somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then it's important, obviously, at some point to start working smarter than harder.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's a nice combo of the two.
Well, you can only run your head into a wall so many times before you realize you're getting a pretty bad headache, right?
Yeah. I like that.
This episode is sponsored by iBoom Media. If you are looking to get your brand out there in the right way and actually grow your social media following, these are the guys you want to talk to. Taking my Instagram following from around 1,800 to now we're around 11,700. My Facebook following from 800 to now 39,000. Wow. And my Twitter following is now closing in on 5,000. So these guys do an amazing job. And they are not just grabbing followers. They're actually finding people that interact, retweet your stuff, like your stuff, and will possibly buy your product or service. So you can check them out over at www.iboommedia.com.
Well, Chandler, we're about to come in for a landing, man. But before we do, are you ready for some rapid-fire questions?
Let's do it.
You are selected to give a commencement speech. What topic do you cover and why?
Stop complaining, start doing. Because I think it's especially pertinent at this point in our country. Is there's so many people complaining, but not doing anything about what they're complaining about. And so that would be my commencement speech.
I think that's awesome too, man, because like it's too many people not taking full responsibility for their own freaking lives and they want other people to do it for them.
Yep.
Do you have a quote that's led you through your journey?
Oh man, I already used it up. that was the whole don't take advice from people you wouldn't gladly switch places with. And if I had to give another one, it would, and this is so cliche, I'm almost embarrassed to say it, but it's the whole you are the average of the five people that you surround yourself with, both from income, from weight, from health, from everything. And I created an entrepreneur house in San Diego for exactly this reason. And I've continued to move around the country for exactly this reason, because I really, really, I mean, a lot of people know that quote, but they don't act upon it. And they don't actively recruit and pick the five people that they're surrounding themselves with. So that would be the biggest one for me.
Absolutely. What about one book that's had a big effect in your life?
There's a lot. I mean, I read about a book a week. So there's a ton. Gosh, the 4-Hour Work Week's one, but that's kind of a lame answer. I would say Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion by Robert Cialdini. That's a huge one in terms of persuasion, sales, marketing, that sort of thing.
Love it. When you hear the word entrepreneur, what one name comes to mind?
One name is in a person.
Mm-hmm.
Who? Right now? The first one was Elon Musk, but the most lasting one is John D. Rockefeller. John D. Rockefeller is he's somebody I've looked up to since I was a kid, and he comes to mind. What a titan.
Totally. Well, Chandler, people have very different definitions of success, but if you got to define success for yourself, what does it mean?
For me, it means that I get to the end of my life, and I know that I've made this world a better place, and I use the gifts and skills that I was gifted with to the best of my ability, and that I've made a lasting impact, and one that's going to exist for long after I'm on this earth. So for me, that means either $100 million or $1 billion company. That's the measuring stick I use for the amount of impact that I want to make on this earth. And so it's reaching that goal, and then, as well as knowing that I left it all on the field.
Love it. Chandler, well, you rock, man. I appreciate you being here with us today. If our listeners want to connect with you, learn more, where's the best place to do that? And also that new book, man.
For sure. Yeah. So we're always putting out content over at self-publishingschool.com. That's a great place to go. If you want a free copy of my brand new book, you can go to self-publishingschool.com/published. And then I'm hanging out on Facebook. You can find me there.
Awesome. Well, Chandler Bolt, thank you so much for being on the Create Your Own Life podcast today.
Thanks, Jeremy.
So hope you guys enjoyed hanging out with me and Chandler today. He totally rocked the mic, and I'm really excited to have had him on. You can check him out over at self-publishingschool.com. Once again, that's self-publishingschool.com. And you can get the show notes for this episode over at jeremyryanslate.com/187. Yikes, /187. That's actually penal code for murder is that number. So that's why I jumped back a little bit. Anyway, guys, have a great day, and I'll catch you on Wednesday when we have internet marketer and host of The Self-Made Man, Mike Dillard, on the show. Rock on, everybody.
Now go out there and create your own life. Motivation may be great, but action is better. Get it done, my friends.